Blog Talk Radio.
Productions presents another episode of the King for a Day Fantasy Football Podcast. Here's your host, the fat guy with the phone himself. He's the commissioner of King for a Day, Rick Goreski. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. I am coming to you live from the King for a Day headquarters here in Maguanago, Wisconsin. I am absolutely wearing the Husky jeans right now. If you didn't know, Husky jeans are all the rage. Dad bods are in. And you know what else is in? Week 4 results. That's what. But before we recap Week 4 of the 2015 King for a Day regular season, let me bring in a special guest. He once helped me get 2 goats and a chicken without asking any questions at all. By the way, I'm telling you, dude, it's not what you were thinking. It was for a dowry. I swear it. I swear it was. There was this Indian girl I was dating. But anyway, please welcome the owner of the Legion of Doom, the owner who I am on record since draft day as saying will be crowned king in 2015, Kurt Kajawa. Kurt, thanks a ton for coming on the show, man.
Thanks a lot, Rick. Thanks for having me, buddy.
Hey, time to get her done, dude. We got a short time to do this, so let's rock. Let's get into a review of Week 4. That's what we're doing today, review of Week 4. Let's start with some league-wide information. Teams finally took on opponents outside of their division this week, Week 4. That's the first week of conference play. The Red Division found conference play particularly challenging as they went 0-4 in Week 4. Week 4 also was the lowest scoring week of the season. Only one team, Damage Inc., topped the century mark with 103 points. Just to make sure that everyone realizes how low of a scoring week this was, not only did the league see only one team hit the 100-point mark, the next highest score was 88 points. I mean, there was nobody, there wasn't even anybody in the 90s. Average score for Week 4 was an amazingly low 70.42 points. That's down 20 points compared to last week. And I actually don't get it, Kurt. I don't understand why, because there were bye weeks that started last week, but there were only two teams on bye, New England and Tennessee. So, actually, if I could throw it to you impromptu here and just ask your thoughts on why it was such a low-scoring week.
I kind of think just all the players, nobody was consistent this week. I mean, you had some players doing good and most players not. I mean, it's just one of those weeks.
Yeah, it is just so weird. I mean, you would almost think like there were 4, 5, 6 teams on bye with scores as low as, like I said, nobody in the 90s, one single team in the 100s. And, geez. But getting back to the show here, in a battle of the Benjamins, Damage Inc. in the battle of the Benjamins, which is what I call our Gothic Conference versus Renaissance Conference kind of running tally of how many teams score the most 100-point weeks. Damage Inc.'s 103 points brings the season standings to 8 100-point efforts for the Gothic Conference compared to 11 for the Renaissance Conference. Last but not least, let's review the reason why I keep my day job. I went 3-3 in the Gothic with my predictions last week and 4-2 in the Renaissance. So, yeah, let's see, that made me 7-5 in week 4. I am now 20-16 overall for the year. Again, I didn't pick in week 1. So let's get recapping, man. Week 4's theme was low scores and blowouts. Three teams had close games. Two in the Gothic decided by 2 points or less, and then another in the Renaissance that was decided by a field goal. Every other game was decided, believe it or not, by 17 points or more. There was even one game decided by 64 points. Just unreal. So in the Gothic, if you're up for it, we can take turns recapping these. Why don't you take the first one, Kurt?
Okay. Boy, what happens when the highest-scoring team of the week takes on the lowest-scoring team of the week? A 64-point blowout. That's what Damage Inc. did to make it rain by a final score of 103-39. This final score may be the league record for the biggest blowout. I've never seen anything like it. It's definitely up there. I've been rallying.
That was me, Kurt. I've been railing on Damage Inc. to get Niall Davis out of his lineup, and he finally did, and he replaced Davis with a white-hot Devontae Freeman. I'll kick it back to you, but I accidentally mentioned that. That was me railing on Damage to get Niall Davis out of there.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, he promptly put up 24 points to lead the team in scoring. In addition, three other players put up double-digit points, including Daryl Smith of Baltimore with 18, Nicole Jackson with 13, his place kicker Justin Tucker hit 11 points. I mean, I'm not trying to rub salt in Pete's wounds over there, but Damage couldn't have played any better. I mean, only Devontae Freeman and Daryl Smith, and still
yeah,
would have won a game.
Those two guys alone.
Yeah.
Would have had 42 points. And Pete put up 39, poor guy.
Yeah, you got to be feeling bad for Pete, but, you know, it's just one of those weeks. you know, if I'm Pete, and if it could go any wrong, it did, including having Kelvin Johnson fumbled going across the goal line and then watch KJ Wright of Seattle illegally bat the ball out of bounds. You know, the ref didn't even call the penalty, but if he had, Johnson would not have been charged with a penalty. You know, and Detroit could have gotten the ball back. You take a plus six, and instead you take a minus two. It's an 8-point swing, and to the negative play on one play. Like I said, everything went wrong for him. You just move on, and hopefully get a better game next week. Best ball had Damage winning 116-74.
Speaking of moving on, what losing streak? As D-Risk wins their third in a row, taking out an impressive opponent in the Muskego Raiders by a score of 78-60. D-Risk put three players in double digits in this one, including 14 from the rookie place kicker in San Diego, Josh Lambeau. He got 12 out of New Orleans linebacker Kiki Ha-Ha and 10 out of Jeremy Macklin of the Chiefs. For the Raiders, they're sure kicking themselves. I'm sure they're out there kicking themselves over lineup decisions that potentially cost them the game. The Raiders had two players in double digits in their lineup. They had 14 from Aya Digbo and 10 from DeAndre Hopkins, but they had four double-digit performers on their bench. Yikes. They had 12 from Doug Martin, 15 from Vincent Jackson, 13 from Martellus Bennett, and 17 from Josh Norman. I mean, is that's the kind of thing, the kind of day for the Raiders. You know, I'm going to award Mark Kellett the league's first ever Tiffany Award. Mark, this one's for you, buddy.
Good.
Sunday night. That's right, Mark Kellett. The first ever Tiffany Award goes out to you, buddy. Whoa, what could have been? That's it. There you have it. Best ball score had the Raiders winning 126-108. Also, if I'm just take the next one, Kurt, if you don't mind. In the closest game of the week, the Old Elm Ogres pulled off an unbelievable comeback victory, fueled by 20 Monday Night Football points out of their defenders, including 13 by Ziggy Ansah of the Lions and 7 by Bobby Wagner of the Seahawks, to defeat the Pale Riders by a score of 68-67, a one-point nail-biter. Ansah, if I'm not mistaken, he nailed a sack and a forced fumble and then a fumble recovery, I think, in the third quarter. And I think that's how it happened. And it sealed the deal against the Pale Riders. Otherwise, Old Elm was working. You know, Pale jumped out to a big lead. And all that Brian had going into that Monday night game is a defensive lineman and a linebacker. And you usually, you know, tell me if I'm wrong, if you got a linebacker, you usually feel like you could get 8-10 is realistic if it's a good linebacker, but defensive lineman, you're kind of like, if you need to get 10 out of a linebacker and 10 out of a defensive lineman, something like that, you usually don't feel so great about that. But he did it.
Yeah, that's probably the last time Ziggy will do that.
Yeah, 13 out of that. So both owners did have to wait out scoring changes to see if this score would hold, and it did. In addition to Ansah's aforementioned 13, Old Elm was led by 13 points from Cam Newton and 10 from Robbie Gould. Jesus, did the Bears even – I can't believe the Bears scored 10 points. Well, anyway, for Pale, another game where they're just shaking their head as they look at their bench, because this isn't the first time that Tom has been able to look to his bench to say that he could have won a game. Zero players in their lineup were in double digits in the starting lineup for the Pale Riders. Meanwhile, three were on their bench, including Jeremy Hill with 21 points, linebacker Brian Cushing with 10, and defensive back Corey Graham with 13. All those points on the bench in a game that was decided by 1 point, especially Jeremy Hill with that 21 spot. It's time to drag out the Dumbass Award. So here we go. Sorry, Tom, you're my friend, but here it is, buddy.
The dumbass. Leisure suits are for dumbasses. Believe me, Jedi dumbass. The reason that bad things happen to you is because you're a dumbass.
So I'm going to throw that out there. You dumbass. 21 points from Hill, and it's on the bench. Ouch. Had to be done. Best ball had the Pale Riders winning 104-94. You can take next one, Kurt.
All right. Next up, the A-team brought their A game, defeating the Made Men by a score of 81-62. Made Men shockingly winless right now after 4 games. For the A-team, they win despite a rare down week from Julio Jones of Atlanta. We've got exactly what I'm being paid to do this show for right now. Not a damn thing. A-team's overall roster was consistent enough to make the win, though, led by 14 from Thomas and 13 from Muhammad Wilkerson. As for Made Men, they match A-team by also putting up 2 in double digits, 12 points from Lawrence Timmons, 10 points from their kicker, Vinatieri. But in the end, up with twice as many goose eggs in their lineup, up leading up to the 4th loss in a row. Nobody predicted this back when... post-game show, you know.
Those post-draft shows, yeah.
It's, couldn't have seen that one coming, that's for sure. But it is what it is. Best ball had A-team winning 195.
Why don't you go with the next one, too? Go ahead.
All right. While Made Men are still looking for their first win of the season, the Wolfpack found theirs upsetting 4U2 Envy 71-47. Le'Veon Bell is back, and Wolf reaped the benefits in the form of 12 points. One of 2 players in double digits for the Wolfpack, the other being Malcolm Smith of the Raiders with 11. On the other side of this one, not much there for Bork, as 4U2 Envy puts up 1 player over 7 points in Rashad Jones.
Wow.
He had 10 points, I believe it was.
Yeah.
4U2 Envy's bench actually had several killer defensive performances that I'm sure Bork is wishing he had in his lineup, including 13 points from both Vinny Ray and Manti Te'o. and 10 from Von Miller. Best ball had Wolfpack going 96-85.
Well, hey, last but not least from the Gothic Conference, the second closest match in the league saw my pick to win it all, your team, the Legion of Doom. Rush! That's my best hawk. Ed, Legion of Doom edges out the Hurricanes by 2 points, 80-78. Believe it or not, the difference in this one, and frankly, as I look deeper into this matchup, there were several things that you could point at, but face value, just looking at the two teams side by side after the fact, the difference is Arian Foster. It was an Arian Foster deuce. Foster, thanks to a fumble, drops an ugly negative 2 points in a game that's decided by two. For the victorious Legion of Doom, your team, you only put three players in double digits this week, 12 from Chris Ivory out in London, Tally Ho, 11 from Brandon McManus, and 10 from Brandon Marshall of Denver. Winning takes the pain out of leaving three players on the bench with 10-plus points, including 18, who could have saw that coming, from Catanzaro of the Cardinals, yeah. 16 from Eli Manning, the freshly acquired Eli Manning, I might add, and 12 points from Ted Ginn. The Hurricanes had a pair of 11-point efforts on their team, defensive line Campbell from the Cardinals and Eric Weddle of the Chargers. The Hurricanes made a mad run at victory. They scored 29 points in the Sunday night and Monday night games total, but alas, they fell just short. And again, I was mentioning how you can look at different things, points on the bench. For the Hurricanes, they lost by two, and Sean Lee left Sunday night's contest with a concussion. So that sure didn't help the cause. Best ball had your team winning 120-104. So did you have any thoughts on that one before I skip away?
You know, I was just sweating it out Monday night, man. Hauschka kicking. I never knew what that was gonna, how that was going to go down. I mean, especially with the three-point kicker bonus, I thought for sure that might kill me, but I survived, so I'm happy to be out of there with a win.
I was watching him, and I just saw him. He just kept coming, and he kept coming. I'm like, man, you know, next thing you know, he's within two, and I'm like, holy cow.
Yeah.
Well, hey, let's move over to the Renaissance Conference then.
All right.
Go ahead. You say more if you want to.
No, I'm good. I'm good.
All right. Well, hey, go ahead and kick off the Renaissance Conference if you don't mind.
Okay, sounds good. The Irishmen bow to the Meat Puppets by a score of 72-53. The undefeated Meat Puppets were led by 12 points from New Orleans linebacker. I don't even know how to
pronounce it.
Kiki-ha. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I butcher all these.
It's terrible. It's terrible. And 10 points from DeAndre Hopkins. While the Puppets got a little luck by facing a low score, they also didn't make any major bench mistakes, which is a trait of winning teams. On the side of the Irishmen, not much worked out, as zero players put up more than 8 points, and five scored nothing at all. The killer stat for the Irishmen was 4 points out of their entire offense. That's 4 points out of quarterback, flex, and tight end positions. Negative two out of their offensive flex alone. Best ball had the Meat Puppets winning 88-71, but nothing the Irish could have done would have helped them. I mean, it was bad.
Well, I'm going to take the next one. My own team, the Gators, take out the Phantoms 85-46. With the second win of the year, the Gators, my team, match their complete win total for all of 2014 in what was my worst year ever. So, hey, I know I'm going to not repeat. Well, I could tie it, I guess, but I'm not going to do worse. The Gators put up two players in double digits, including 16 from Eli Manning and 13 from Corey Graham. I don't know if Mike Thomas knew it or not, but this was a revenge game for me. I was in Mike's division last year, and he roughed me up pretty good. So after last year's multiple whoopings, Gators finally lashed one out onto Phantoms. For the Phantoms, for at least this year's Phantoms, week four was a nightmare. One player, Brandon Marshall of the Broncos, put up double-digit points, and that was 10. Only two other players scored 6 points or more for the Phantoms. Just a forgettable week. Best ball had the Gators winning 103-61. Next one's yours if you want it.
Yeah, sure. Let's see. The hippies that are dirty take their filthy acts on the road and win their third consecutive game, defeating the previous undefeated Lost in the Sauce by a score of 87-60. He's put three players in double digits, including 18 from Catanzaro of the Cardinals, 14 from linebacker Thomas Davis, and 13 from tight end Martellus Bennett. For Lost, they lose their first of the year, thanks to not only having one player score 10 points or more, that was their kicker, but mostly for having four players score nothing and two players score a single point. Two points out of half their lineup won't cut it, even as low of a scoring week as week four was. Let's see. Best Ball had Dirty Hippies winning 107-81.
Well, in the only close game of the week in the Renaissance Conference, the Bierman's Brawlers get their first win of the season. Way to go, Gar, by defeating Gracie's Got Game. Final score was 88-85. It was a field goal, and no, that was not a home field advantage win. Gracie actually had the home field advantage, so Gar had to overcome it. Gracie gets an assist in this one, though, as they forgot to change their lineup, leaving Tom Brady on a bye as their starting quarterback. Meanwhile, Phil Rivers rides the pine with 21 points, a game that was decided by 3 points. Gracie left Tom Brady in on bye. Phil Rivers is on the bench with 21. Thanks to that bye week mistake, Gracie became the first team ever to get the new $5 fine that was voted in by the league's owners this past offseason. So Frams was on the site that morning. I know people wouldn't know this. I happen to have seen this all kind of unfold. Frams is on the website at 9:30 in the morning, and he's also in our Dynasty League, the Mad Dog Dynasty League, and he's got Brady in that league too. So Frams logs into both of them. He moves Brady out of his lineup in Mad Dog and just forgets he thought he did it. I talked to him later. He thought he had put Brady in, and he just didn't hit the button or just didn't sub Brady out in King for a Day. It's a mix-up, but still a loss despite that. So he had the fourth highest score in the entire league in week four, and he still takes a loss. For the victorious Brawlers, Devontae Freedom was the player of the game. Freeman's 24 points joined Brandon McManus's 11 points and Rashad Jones' 10 to lead Beer to victory. Bierman puts up the second highest point total of their season in a week when everybody else was down. So good job, Bierman. Best Ball had Gracie winning 137-109, though. Too many points on the bench. You want the next one?
Yeah, I'll take the next one. Next up was the Kenosha Commandos beating the Typhoons 82-59. The Commandos stay undefeated despite a negative 4 points combined from wide receivers Larry Fitzgerald and Kelvin Johnson. Defense led the way for Kenosha as all three of their double-digit players came from the defense side of the ball, including 14 points from
Igbo. Try it with
13
an I.
And 13 points from Muhammad Wilkerson and Vinnie Ray. Flipped the script for the Typhoons because it was an uncharacteristically weak performance from their defense that contributed to the loss of this game. Typhoons got the following from their defense. 1 point from defensive lineman Griffin, 4 points from Pozlesny, 3 points from Warlow, 2 points apiece from Lofton and Sean Lee, and 11 points from Amukamara. That's a grand total of 23 points from a defense that whose previous low in a single week was 41 points. Not that the rest of the team did any better. Typhoons did get a 10-point effort out of Jeremy Macklin, but beyond that, nothing much else. Best Ball had Kenosha winning 123-78.
Yeah, on Typhoons, I just want to throw in there, if you go back and look at their first four games on defense alone, just add up the points from defense. I mean, their lowest going into this week where they only scored 23 points on defense, 41 points was the lowest amount that they had scored on defense. I mean, geez. I mean, like 50, 60 points a week out of their defense, and then they come into this one and just can't keep that going. So it's just a bad game, but usually that team's going to put up a lot more points on defense. So Kenosha was kind of catching. Yeah, they caught him at the right time. For myself, if I could, take the last one here. The Saiyans, pardon me, they got their first win of the year, defeating the Champions of Chaos by a score of 87-43. The Saiyans finally figured out the secret to victory. It's to score more points than every other team in the entire damn conference, because then no one can score more than you. So poor guy has had a couple of high-scoring weeks where he just got nipped, including one against me. Saiyans are now 1-0 on the year, by the way, when they outscore all other possible opponents. Saiyans led by four players in double digits, including 18 from Daryl Smith, that's incredible, linebacker, 15 from Drew Brees, 13 from DeQuell Jackson, and 10 from Adam Vinatieri. My God, how old is that guy? It's got to be like, seriously, I'm going to actually click on his name now just because...
I don't think he's any older than the guy on Atlanta, the kicker for Atlanta.
Bryant? See, it says Vinatieri has been in the league for 20 years. He was born in 70. He's older than me.
Oh.
He was born in 1972.
Wow.
December 28th, 1972.
Older, oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, I can look up Bryant, too, but Vinatieri, and he's still going strong. I mean, good for him, right?
Just goes to show you, kickers, the best position to be at if you want to keep it rolling.
Jason Hansen is the only kicker that I remember going 20-plus years. I mean, and he only hung it up about 3-4 years ago. But who was the guy from Tennessee that hung on forever and then kept coming back? Was it Joe Nedney?
Yeah,
well, anyway,
I'm right on that one.
Matt Bryant, to your point, 1975, May 29th, 1975, he's been in the league for 14 years. So Vinatieri's got him by 6 years, 20 years in the league for Vinatieri. For the losing champions of chaos, for the losing champs, try that for an oxymoron. Anyway, it's often said that teams take on the traits of their coach. As such, Chris Koch was sick last week in real life, so her team... also sick, 43 points for the week. That was the fewest points in the Renaissance Conference and the second fewest points scored in the entire league. They definitely were under the weather. The champs did get 12 points out of Lawrence Timmons, 10 points out of Brian Cushing. Do the math, that's 22 points on a team that scored 43. Those two guys got half the team's points. Best ball had the Saiyans winning this one 105-86, a much-needed break for the Saiyans, as they had been facing a high-scoring schedule, and they kind of caught a break here with Chris's team. So that's it for the game recaps. Why don't we review the high teams and players for the week? Do you want to take the top five scoring teams in King for a day?
Yeah, that sounds good. At number one, we had Damage Inc. with 103 points. Number two was the Beerman's Brawlers with 88. Dirty Hippies came in third with 87. Seance was also tied for third with 87. And hey, your Gators, fifth highest scoring team in the league with 85.
Let me take the quarterbacks. You take the running backs. Top scoring quarterback this week was Phil Rivers at 21, Sam Bradford next at 18, also Nick Foles at 18. That was a tie. Eli Manning at 16 and Drew Brees 15.
All right. Running backs had Devontae Freeman with 24, Jeremy Hill with 20, Chris Ivory with 12, Le'Veon Bell with 12, and Duke Johnson with 12.
Before I do the wide receivers, what's more shocking, Freeman at 24 or Hill at 20 last week?
I would say Hill at 20.
Yeah, that was – he just came off that bad game with the fumbles. But, I mean, Freeman just came off a 24-point game, so
– yeah.
And he's not exactly Adrian Peterson, so –
yeah, I suppose I guess I didn't see another three-touchdown game coming out of him.
Top five wide receivers last week, Vincent Jackson, 15 points. Tavon Austin, 12 points. Ted Ginn Jr., 12 points. And another 12-pointer, Alan Hearns of the Jacksonville Jaguars. DeAndre Hopkins at 10, and I'm sure there were several others tied at 10. Why don't you take tight ends? I'll take kickers.
All righty. Martellus Bennett topped the tight ends with 13, followed by Colby Fleener with 12. Darius Green, Gary Barnage, and Richard Rodgers all three had 9 points.
Top five kickers this past week, week four. Cairo Santos, 21. Chandler Catanzaro, 18. Graham Geno, 14, along with Josh Lambeau, the rookie from San Diego, 14. And Travis Coons, who I think is in Cleveland, 13. Defensive lineman, over to you, buddy.
All right. Mohammed Wilkerson led defensive lineman with 13. Also, Ziggy Ansah also had 13. Steven Tuitt had 12. Michael Johnson had 12. And Ryan Dallaire had also had 12.
You know, on Dallaire, I was reading some stuff on defensive players today, and I read that he probably isn't going to keep getting the snaps that he got. Jared Allen's down there, and Allen is going to be the guy. They kind of eased him in last week, and Dallaire got several more snaps than he's going to get. So nice job by Dallaire, but that might be his best game of the year. Hopefully nobody's running out to ink him on their team. Top linebackers last week, Darryl Smith of the Baltimore Ravens was a madman, and he stole all kinds of tackles away from Mosley and pissed off Mosley owners. He got 18. Thomas Davis, with Keekly still having concussion issues, which, by the way, he's not back yet this week from what I'm looking right now to see if I have anything more recent, but I think he's still out as of right now, so that's rough news if you're a Keekly owner. Good news if you're a Thomas Davis owner. Anthony Hitchens of the Cowboys came in with 14 points. Again, Sean Lee getting hurt in that game, concussion effects, and Hitchens came in and cleaned up. Dequell Jackson continuing to do well in Indianapolis with 13 points. And Vinny Ray, the guy that's he's the every-down linebacker in Cincinnati right now. Burfict is still injured. I think he was on like that list where you're out for 6 weeks and then you physically unable to perform list or something. And anyway, not sure if Vinnie Ray will keep this going. I think he'll remain an every-down linebacker there, but interesting to see what happens when Burfict comes back and rounds himself into shape. Over to you for defensive backs.
Alrighty. Josh Norman came in with 17 points. John Cyprin with 16 points. T.J. Ward had 15. Desmond Trufant also had 15. And then James Igdebo had 14.
You know, that's a wrap on week four for the review stuff. I do want to ask you before we wrap the show up, though, Kurt. Jonathan Cyprin, last week, I was shocked. I was completely surprised that you and Ken, two of the better teams in the conference, picked up some really good players off of waivers. And I wanted to get your opinion on that, especially you picked up T.J. Yeldon, and he got his first 100-yard game of the season this past week. Yeldon, playing for the Jaguars, who are without their top offensive guy, Julius Thomas. Once Thomas comes back, Yeldon's a rookie. So the first few games of the year, I think he's getting his feet wet. Jacksonville looks a lot better than they used to look, so they're not the same Jaguars that have been getting stomped in the ground. They're actually competitive. And once Julius Thomas comes back, I think that's going to do is open up the running game for Yeldon. I think it'll be even better for him. So you got to feel good getting him, right?
Oh, absolutely. I actually didn't think I had a shot, but I figured I'd put a waiver claim in on him anyways. I figured with my record the way it was, somebody lower than I would have gotten him, but I was happy to get that email from you, that's for sure.
Yeah, I feel the same way sometimes when I put in the claim, and I think part of the reason I'm talking about this is for all the owners out there to know that when every week all those guys that get cut, when owners are making moves, all those guys are restricted free agents. They have to sit, their rights are on hold for the rest of the week, and we do that as a league so that I can't dump a player to Kurt to try to help Kurt beat somebody else. That's kind of a collusion type thing, so we don't allow that. So what we do is everybody that's cut gets put on hold, and then while they're on hold, all of the teams in the league from that conference can claim the players that are on hold. They can put in a claim for them, just like in real life in the NFL and Major League Baseball. You can claim a player that's cut, and you can actually take over their contract and have them come and join your team before they become an unrestricted free agent. And you know, just look those lists over every week. All you have to do is email the commissioner, say who you want to claim, and say who you'll cut to take to make room on the roster for that player. And you never know, you might get some really good stuff. Speaking
of that, proof of that.
Well, Kenny too picked up Cyprin, which I don't know if Scott Phillips is listening, but Scott, I don't know, do you just hate Jonathan Cyprin? He dumped him in Mad Dog, and I picked him up off of waivers a couple years ago, and now in King for a Day, he dumped him, and he held him for 3 weeks while he was hurt, and then he dumped him, and then Ken picks him up, and first week the guy's back, he puts up a 16 spot, so that's really, really good stuff. And then who's the pack? Ty Montgomery was also cut, and Ken picked up Ty Montgomery, so I thought that was a really good value as well.
Absolutely.
Great value on the waivers this week. Also, the free agent draft, too, is something where traditionally in the Gothic, guys just don't go hard on that free agent draft. So good value out there to be had for all the owners. Kurt, that's a wrap for the Week 4 review show. Would you have any comments you'd like to make before we wrap it up?
I'm pretty good with Week 4.
All right. Well, I tell you what, we're going to do the Week 5 preview show, so see everybody on the other side. On behalf of my guest, Legion of Doom owner Kurt Kujawa, I'm Rick Goreski saying don't sweat it if the first 4 weeks didn't work out the way you hoped. Just go ahead, load up your lineup, and keep firing. Thanks again for joining me on another episode of the King for a Day podcast. I leave you with a little bit of Spaceballs.
He's an asshole, sir.
I know that.
What's his name?
That is his name, sir.
Asshole. Major Asshole.
And his cousin?
He's an asshole, too, sir. Gunner's mate, first class, Philip Asshole.
How many assholes we got on this ship, anyhow?
Go!
I knew it. I'm surrounded by assholes.
Keep firing, assholes!
Sorry, Daddy.